We continue our learning. We're in Gittin Perakei Mishnah Gimel. Previous Mishnah, we discussed the difference between Nechasim Mishubadim and Nechasim Dinei Chorin. Person who owes a debt may not have cash, may not have movables, and he may have real estate. And that real estate may be Nechasim Dinei Chorin. It's free. It has not been sold to someone else. Or maybe it's Nechasim Mishubadim. It was sold to someone else. And in certain circumstances, we allow the creditor, the one who's owed the money, let's say, to collect that debt and go to the purchaser and confiscate that field, that land, that karka from that person. Is that right? The lokeach, the buyer, he just purchases the land. The answer is we assume that if something's written down, let's say in a shtar, that there was a loan, there was a sale, whatever it may be. So that lokeach, that shtar has a kol, that has a voice, literally means people. It's publicized, people know about it, and he should have done a title search to before he bought that piece of land. So that's, and we have that in many places in Chas. Our Mishnah is going to show us that there's an exception to the rule, and where we don't allow someone who is owed the debt to collect from Nechasim Mishubadim, but from the Lokach, the one who may have bought that field, and maybe should not have purchased that field, and we'll see why, but only from Nechasim B'nei Chorin, the person who owes the debt. If he doesn't have cash, doesn't have movables, if he has free property, that property, these people will see have the right to collect, but Nechasim Mishubadim not, and that's all M'bnei Tikkun HaOlam. We'll see that although maybe they really should have the right to go to Nechasim Mishubadim as well to collect that debt, to collect whatever is owed to them, but nonetheless, because of Tikkun Olam, for the welfare of the world, there are Chachamim and Takana only from Nechasim B'nei Chorin. So the first one, Ein Motzi and La'achilas Peres. We'll go through each one of them. There's a list of three examples of where we don't allow a person to collect from Nechasim Mishubadim just Nechasim B'nei Chorin. And the first on that list is Achilas Peros. The case of Achilas Peros, according to many of the Farshim, works like this. You have, let's say, Shimon stole a field from Reuven. And then Shimon sold that field to Levi. And Levi then, not knowing it was stolen, so he planted it and he produced many crops. Now, Reuven comes and says that's a stolen field. And the Nigzal has the right, they come to court, the Nigzal, Reuven, has the right to take that field away from Levi, along with the peros, the crops that are on there. And he doesn't have to pay the lokeach, doesn't have to pay the buyer, Levi, for all of the crops. He pays him for what he invested, what we call the hotzos, the expenditures, in order to plant those crops. But that's it. So now the lokeach, the buyer, which is Levi, goes back to Shimon, who's the gazlan, and says, okay, you know me, I bought this land, this was stolen land, you owe me for the land. So the halacha is that he collects from him, that Shimon pays Levi for the land. Let's say Shimon doesn't have cash. Let's say he doesn't have metaltolin. So Levi collects from the real estate of Shimon. But, and that would be true, he can even collect the value of the land even from Nechasim Mishubadim. The case of the Mishnah here is, what about the Demei Peros? What about all of the crops that he should profit because he, Levi, didn't know this was a stolen field? Then he not only invested money, which he got paid back for, but now we have all the crops, all the Peros. So that he also gets to collect from Shimon, but from only Nechasim B'nei Chorin and not Nechasim Mishubadim. So that's if Shimon had any properties that he sold into someone else, let's say he sold to Yehuda, so Levi can't go to Yehuda to collect the peros value of the crops value of what he should be profiting from Nechasim Mishubadim. He could only go to Shimon the Goslin himself to collect the Demei Peros. That's case one. And then Mishnah says of Lishvach Karkos. What Shvach Karkos? Literally means the profit of the field. Let's say someone bought a field and let's say our case from before, the Lokeach, Levi, so he benefited the field, let's say, with certain things he planted, let's say trees or fertilizer. And now what happens? So the Nigzal, who is Reuven, comes and now takes the field from him. So what can, so the halacha here as well is for that shvachos, however he benefited the land. This is not peros, this is more just benefiting the land with fertilizer, whatever he planted that benefits the land itself. And now the land itself is of greater value. That he goes to the goslin to collect. but only from Nechasim B'nei Chorin. And then the Mishnah says, Ulvilamazon Ha'isha V'Habanos. What's that? So there's a Tanai Ksuva, part of the condition of the Ksuva. We learn in Ksuva's Perek Dalad, Mishnais Yud Alef through Yud Beis, that Almana, after the husband passes away, she is going to receive Mizona. She's going to be fed, going to be supported from the estate of the husband. Not only that, the daughters, his daughters also, not only his wife, but the daughters as well, are going to get Mizonas until they get married. And now when they come to collect their mizonos, they collect from that estate. But that's only from B'nai Chorin and not from any nechasim that husband may have sold to someone else. Why should this be? After all, this is a debt that's owed in all of these cases. Someone owes money. Why can they not go to nechasim mishubanim? The answer is B'nai Tikkun Olam. Because what's the Tikkun Olam? What's the benefit of the world? Because there's no kitzvah, there's no fixed amount. When someone buys, who bought this field potentially from Shimon the Goslin? Take that example. So it was Yehuda. Now, Yehuda, as we said, he should know when he buys a field to do a title search. That may be true. But he doesn't know how much potentially someone would be collecting. Someone has, we're talking about peros, shvach karkos, that Levi may have now potentially profited from this, from his field. And now because of Shimon being a Goslin, let's say, sold this field to Yehuda, Yehuda needs to know how much a potential buyer of Shimon's field is going to now profit or invest, and after invest money, how much he's going to gain. That could be in the thousands, tens of hundreds of thousands of dollars. He doesn't know. So when someone buys a field, he doesn't know how much once someone may be potentially collecting from him. So therefore, for Tikkun Olam, we say that the shvach karkos, what the field benefited, and the payros cannot be collected from nechasim mishubadim. And the same thing when it comes to the mizonos of the isha and the banos. You don't know how much they're going to need. So when Yehuda buys this field from Shimon, thinking that, oh, who knows, you have to be careful. Shimon, you know, owes money to different people and things like that. Okay, so, but there's no way for Yehuda to anticipate how much potentially people we may be coming to collect from Shimon, that now they're going to go to Yehuda to collect. Could be so much money. So because of that, these extras, the peros, the mizonos isha v'abanos, something that's not fixed, that you really, there's no way to know to anticipate how much it's going to be, that cannot be collected from Menachasim Mishubad, because that's not fair to Yehuda. When there's a loan, okay, there's a loan, there's a shtar, this is the money that was lent, it's $1,000, so Yehuda needs to know that, well, if Shimon, let's say, borrowed money from Reuven, he's not a Goslin, borrowed money from Reuven, oh, you know, you have to make sure he borrowed money. You know, if you buy this land from him, potentially, Reuven may be coming to confiscate that land for his loan. Okay, I know this, he has $1,000. I'll make sure not to buy every piece of land from Shimon to make sure that he's left with $1,000. That he can do, but what we're talking about in the Mishnah, there's a lot more money. There's no way to anticipate. This is a Tikkun Olam. Only from Nechasim B'nei Chorin can a Levi collect from Shimon, from Shimon himself, and cannot go to Yehuda for these extras. Then the Mishnah says, V'amotzi mitziah. So that's the line in the Mishnah. Again, this is the beginning of the Mishnah. Ein motzi en la'achilas peros, v'lishvach karkos, v'lamazon hisham banos, min Nechasim Shubanim, v'nei Tikkun Olam. Only from B'nei Chorin. Then the Mishnah says, V'amotzi mitziah, lo yishavah, v'nei Tikkun. Another halach mitzvah, a person who finds an object and returns it to the owner, and the owner questions, oh, hold on, maybe that's not the whole aveda. I think I lost more than that. So maybe he should take a shvua that he returned everything and it didn't keep anything for himself. No shvua. Why? Because if you this is a Tikkun Olam. If you require people to take a shvua and they return a lost object, they can say, you know what? I'm not returning a lost object. They see an object, so you know I'm not getting involved. I don't have to swear in court if the owner of this object says, oh, I didn't return the entire thing. So that's the Tikkun Olam, no shvua. Then Perek Hey, Mishnah Dalet. Yusomim Shesamchu Eitz HaBalabayis. You have a case where a father passed away, and you have someone, a Balabayis, someone in the community, let's say, takes charge of the Yusomim of the orphans. They are And this person wasn't appointed officially as a custodian on their property as an apotropos, but nonetheless he's taking care of things. Oh, shemina lohen avihen apotropos. Or let's say the father in his lifetime said, you know, after he passes away, I want you, whoever this person is, I want you to be an apotropos, a custodian for the orphans for my children. In these cases, chayov la'aser perosehen. So these people, the balabais or the apotropos, are obligated to separate from the fruit of the Yisomim, separate Truma and Masros, so they don't eat. They're young children, so they don't eat anything Davaras. So that's their responsibility. Abitropesh Shemino Avi Yisomim Yishava. So said, and now Mishnah is going to have a machlokes. What, when it comes to a Shavua, the apotropos, who potentially is a guardian, a custodian on their property, maybe he's taking things for himself and the Yisomim don't know. So an apotropos that was appointed, we're going to distinguish between whether he was appointed by the father or appointed by Beis Din. And we're going to see, do you have to take a shvua or not? And we're going to have a machlokas in this case. Apotropos, shemino avi Yisomim, yishava. The halacha is that apotropos that was appointed by the father in the father's lifetime to take care of things after he passes away for the orphans, when the Yisomim become Gedolim, and the apotropos now can give them all of the property to take care of it on their own, the apotropos has to swear that he didn't take anything from that property. That's what we call a shvua b'tainas safek, or shvua shelo b'taina, means he's taking an oath where no one's making any claim against him. And the Mishnais and Shuras, Perek Zayin Mishnah Ches, has the Eilun Ishbon shelo b'taina. There are several people who take a shvua even where no one's making a counterclaim. A shutof, a partner, a resim, which are a sharecropper, an apotropos, as we just said. So that's where he was appointed. The apotropos was appointed by the father. He has to take a shvua to the Yisomim that he didn't take, and once the Yisomim become a gedolim, that he didn't take anything from the property as he was the custodian. But let's say Minahu Beis Din. Lo Yishava. But an apotropos that was appointed by Beis Din, not by the father, he does not have to take the shvua. Why? Because, and this is, of course, no one's making, in a case where no one's making a taina against him, he has no obligation to take a shvua that he didn't use any of the property. Why? Because this apotropos is doing so. Why? He's helping out because Beis Din imposed this upon him. So he gains nothing from this. So if you would make him take a shvua, even when there's no claim against him, he's going to refuse to take this apotropos. He's going to refuse to take the custodianship at all from the Beis Din. But an apotropos appointed by the father, so he obviously has gained something. They're obviously friendly, and they had some type of relationship. So he feels he owes the father. So that type of apotropos would accept the custodianship regardless in a case of the father, and that's why we make him take a shvua. We don't make him take a shvua in the case of Beis Din, because otherwise we're afraid he's not going to accept it at all. Abba Shalom Er Chiluf HaDvarim. It's just the opposite. Why just the opposite? He holds, if you're appointed by the father, you don't have to take a shvua. Why? Because all he's doing a chesed. He's doing an act of kindness for the father. And if you're going to make him chayv a shvua, he's going to say, okay, I'm not going to do a favor for your father. But if Beis Din appoints him, we make him take a shvua. Why? Because he's never going to decline being appointed by Beis Din, because Beis Din relies upon him. He has obviously a good reputation. People say, oh, he's very trustworthy. So that will be publicized. So he'll never decline that. So therefore, there's no reason we have to make a takana not to make him take a shvua, because we don't have to be worried that he's going to decline the appointment by Beis Din. Therefore, when you're appointed by Beis Din, there he does take a shvua. So Abba Shalom is exactly the opposite of the Tanakhama. Then the Mishnah says, has a whole list of examples, what we call hezek she'eino nikar, where you're causing damage, you're damaging someone's property, and there's a financial loss, but it's not recognizable that it's a financial loss. So we have one example, hametame, person who makes someone's taro, someone's food that are tohor, now makes them tame. Let's say you have truma. So truma that's tamea cannot be eaten by a kohen. You can use, let's say, truma oil as fuel, but that's tame. But otherwise, yeah, if it's tame wine, let's say, tame bread, you can't eat it. So now now there's a financial loss. Or v'hamidameya. So there's truma. And a person now mixes chulin into his friend's truma. So that's also financial loss because his friend, it was chulin. You had chulin. Well, it started out as chulin. So chulin anyone can eat. And now you mix truma into it, so that's a financial loss because of supply and demand. It can only be eaten by kohanim. So if a person mixes truma into his friend's chulin, and now it has to be sold, and now it's not as expensive, can't get as much money for it, so that's a financial loss. But it's once again, it's not nikar, it's not recognizable. V'hamenaseh, a person who, let's say, poured mixed yayin nesech, which was yayin that was poured for avodah zarah purposes, which is asur b'hana, into his friend's wine. So you don't notice that there's been damage, but it's now asur b'hana, now you can't have the whole mixture. So says the Mishnah Bishogeg, if you did it Bishogeg, this person did to his friend, let's take the case of Metame. He thought I was allowed to, I can be Metame, my friend's Truma. He didn't realize it's a problem to do that for the Kohen. Or Midamea, he thought, oh, there's no, if I put some Truma into this Chulin, there's no financial loss there. Truma and Chulin cost the same. Didn't realize. No, they don't. And or Menasech. He didn't know this was the Yayin Nesek at all. He mixed the wine in. All these cases are Shogeg, then Patri doesn't have to pay for the Nesek. But B'mezid, even though in other cases, Shogeg, we normally do. We say, Adamu L'Olam, if you cause a financial loss, even though you did B'shogeg, you have to pay for it. But here, by Hezek, Sheino Nikar, we say it's not recognizable, Eino Hezek, and therefore you Patri if it's B'shogeg, B'mezid. But if you did it with Kavana, you really wanted to be Mazik, your friend's money, you wanted to cause him a Hefzik. Then you have to pay for it. Now the Gemara says that even if you did it amazed, you're really not chayv min hadin because there's no change in any of these things. It says hezek sheino nikar, and hezek sheino nikar is ein shmo hezek. It's the chachamim because of tikkun olam, which is why this mission is here, which is why the chachamim are mechayv midrabanan, so people don't ruin mitame their friend's taro's food or midamei manasech and say, oh, I'm going to be potter. This way you can cause your friend a financial loss and never have to pay if you're angry at him. You want to do something to cause him harm. So midrabanan, you have to pay if you did it amazing. But shogeg, you are potter. Hakonim shepaglu shepiglu ba mikdash. So pigul, we'll learn hopefully kachim one day. Seder kachim. Pigul is where a kohen has in mind during one of the four avodos. One of the avodos is, of course, the shechita of the karban and the kabbal of the blood. Then holocha, walking the blood to the mizbeach, and then the zrikas adam, sprinkling on the mizbeach. So if during any one of those four avodos, the kohen had in mind that he is going to eat from the karban outside to eat from it or burn the karban. Chutz lizmano, beyond its time, let's say a shlonim, it can be eaten for a day, 2 days, and a night in between. And he has in mind, he's good, while he's doing one of these avodos, let's say while he's sprinkling the blood, I plan on eating this karban for 3 days. That passes the karban, that's called pigul, and if you eat that meat, you chayv kares. So a kohenim piglu b'mikdash, mizid, and if they dis b'mezid, so this is another example of a hezek that's not recognizable, and that's why this is here. If they mezid, which means that they knew the carbon becomes pasul that way, then chayav, and they have to pay the owner of the carbon because the owner now has to bring another carbon. So you have to pay the owner, but only this is only if you did it b'mezid. And once again, because it's a hezek sheino nikar. Let's say the owner didn't bring a carbon neder, he brought a carbon adavu, which meant he designated this particular carbon. So the kohen made that pigel, so you don't have to replace it with another carbon. So maybe the kohen shouldn't have to pay it all because in the end he doesn't have to replace it and he doesn't have to buy a new one. So there's no harm in the end. The answer is it is harm. The owner of the carbon is upset. I wanted to bring a carbon, Now I can't bring a carbon. Now the carbon, rather, is possible, disqualified, and I wanted to bring one. So if he did it b'mezid, the Kohanim who made pigul in the Beis HaMikdash with this machshava of chutz lizmano, if they did it b'mezid, they're going to be chayiv to pay.